My name is George Strombolopoulos, and welcome to a very special show to celebrate the music and the sounds of this new film called Up in the Air, the new Jason Reitman picture. Of course, you know, Jason, Oscar-nominated director, Juno, thank you for smoking, is the name of the picture, and now he's got his brand new film. And before we get into the film and the soundtrack, Jason, tell people who's in this and who, what their characters are.
Up in the Air follows Ryan Bingham, played by George Clooney. He's a guy who fires people for a living, you know, like a corporate downsizer. And he spends his entire life on the road, living hub to hub, airports, airplanes, hotels, rental cars. In fact, his main goal in life, the thing that brings him happiness and purpose, is collecting miles, like points, you know, anything that gives you reason to put one of those cards in your wallet. He even preaches about this. So you see him making speeches where he talks to groups of people about how to simplify your life, clean things out, and remove all the really the things and the people that weigh you down. The story follows him as his life on the road is challenged by various people along the way, played by actors like Jason Bateman, Zach Galifianakis, Danny McBride, and in particular, two women played by Vera Farmiga and Anna Kendrick, who really force him to start questioning his way of life.
When you look at this story, and because you've got a guy who's very isolated, his character certainly feels isolated throughout his journey. When you start to assemble the soundtrack for it, you have to match the mood. You have to, like, how hard was it to put this soundtrack together to get that right?
Well, what's interesting is that the soundtrack changed. You know, on Juno, very early on, I had a good idea of what the sound of that movie should be. And I started assembling a soundtrack to my iTunes, and it didn't really veer much. I'd learned of new music, but the sound was the sound. This was a movie where, while I was writing it, I had two songs that I thought for sure would be in this movie, and they're nowhere to be found on the soundtrack. One is Hank Williams' Rambling Man. I really thought that was going to be the sound of the film. Mm-hmm. I would use a lot of Hank Williams and a lot of old country western. And
wasn't the entire soundtrack supposed to be country western?
Yeah, that was it.
The whole thing.
That was it. And there is a cut of this film where it was all old country western music. And, you know, that's one of those things. And I try to talk to young filmmakers all the time about this, that the film will start to tell you what it is and what it needs. And I don't care how much that song influenced you. In fact, there is a song that influenced each one of my movies that has never wound up in the movie.
What was that song for Juno?
On Juno, it was a Yola Tango song called You Can Have It All. Okay. And I thought that was the song, the opening title song. That's what people would think of when they thought of Juno. And I managed to get another Yola Tango song in there. But yeah, no, I mean, that song's not in that movie.
What was the song for Thank You for Smoking?
It was I'm a Man by Steve Winwood.
And that's a great song.
I used to listen to that on loop. I mean, that was the way I would get in the mood to write that movie. And the same thing was for this. I would, when I needed to write Up in the Air and I needed to get away from the distractions of my life, I would turn on Hank Williams' Ramblin' Man, and boom, there I'd be writing. So it's a funny thing when you just suddenly cut it out and realize, okay, it got me here, but it's not going to be part of the film.
We'll play a bunch of the songs from the soundtrack. We should play one now. It's not a country song, but it's a cover version of perhaps the most important folk song in the history of American music. Talk about the choice to use This Land Is Your Land, Sharon Jones's cover.
Well, there I was trying to replace the Hank Williams song, and I was trying a couple different ideas. And this was something that I put very early into my iTunes library of songs that made sense for this film. I mean, for the obvious reason, a person singing about the country, and here's a guy flying around the country. But there was something else to it, and I never could quite put my finger on it until my father one day said, you know, it's interesting that you chose that song because it was a big labor movement song when it was first written, and all of a sudden it made perfect sense.
This land is your land. This land is my land. Now I saw below me.
Talking to Jason Reitman here about the sounds of his new movie called Up in the Air. Because Juno, the music was a huge part of the conversation, when you make the next movie, it's not just pressure to make the next really good movie, the pressure to have another great soundtrack. Did you feel that?
Oh, yeah. You start to enter that kind of dangerous Zach Braff territory where... you know, people really enjoyed the music from the last one, and they're kind of just waiting for you to screw up. Mm-hmm. And I think they have it in for you.
And so when you sat down to pick the songs for this, did you go to your friends and say, I need to hear the emotions of, did you have nouns? Did you send nouns out to your friends saying, I need songs that match nouns?
It is a mass email.
Yeah, an
Give
adjective.
Me music. I need to speak to people. No, I think the trick, there's all kinds of pressure of coming off of a film that did well. And Juno was a film that was appreciated. And that can terrify filmmakers. And the truth is, you just have to go back to why you are telling a story.
Did it terrify you?
Juno is one of those films where we made it, this tiny movie for no money, and there was really no expectation of it. So the fact that it did well and it was received well, it kind of changes the course of the filmmaker's life. And fortunately, I had this script that I had been working on for already so many years that I knew what I wanted to do next. And when it came to the kind of music I wanted to put in the film, I just decided I'm going to do what I always do. I'm just going to react instinctually and see what works.
Now, when you're selecting songs for it, how much goes into the decision process in terms of what the song's about, who the artist is? Lots of songs have their own baggage. You have an Elliott Smith song on the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Elliott comes with a lot of baggage, positive and negative. What about if the sound is good, but the song means too much? Does the dialogue have to be literal? There's all these things that come with the song.
Oh, there's tons. First of all, I'll speak to the lyrics, because that's a big one. That really turns me off when the lyrics match exactly what's happening on screen. And I've had that case.
And then she walked out the door.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've had that where I find a song and I just think it's perfect. And then literally something as small as in the song, the guy goes and set it down or something like that. And then the guy sets something down. It drives me crazy. And I go, oh, I guess I can't use this one. And maybe sometimes you can shift it 10 seconds in one direction or another just so they don't match. So maybe the guy in the song sings it and it doesn't happen for a few seconds. But, you know, that's a subtle thing that affects it. And then... usually for me, it's just tone. It's just one of those instinctual things, and it's as clear as whether something is in key or not. You can just tell whether it's in the right tone for the film. As far as the history, I don't think it matters quite as much. I mean, it's lovely when it happens, and I think those kind of magical connections do happen. But I don't really think about that. I got a giant iTunes library, and I really like to just keep my receptors open, knowing mm-hmm. that music can come from anywhere.
Now, when you went with Elliott Smith, was that an easy decision to put an Elliott Smith song in?
Elliott Smith, that was a tough decision. I mean, Elliott Smith obviously had a huge moment in Good Will Hunting, where you can't really separate those two. I mean, the success of the music and the success of the movie are somehow intertwined. Yeah. When you listen to that song, you think of Matt Damon, you know, going off to California. And then Elliott Smith had another great placement in The Royal Tenenbaums in the Wes Anderson movie. Mm-hmm. And even then it felt like, wow, I can't believe Wes Anderson just used Elliott Smith. But I guess he did, and that, you know, that demonstrated how brave he was. So certainly I couldn't be a third movie to use one of his songs. I remember we placed it in the movie thinking, well, we'll definitely replace this at some point. It's there. It's, you know, it serves as the right tone. We'll cut to it. And it's one of those things. It's like it just starts. It's like the roots grow and it holds strong, and all of a sudden you can't change it.
Well, you didn't pick a famous song. I mean, you picked a song off of his record New Moon, which came out long after he passed away.
Right.
And it was songs that he had recorded that his friends had found mm-hmm. and people he had worked with had found, and they assembled them. They barely added anything to them. Almost no mixing, almost no production.
And believe you me, these were the excuses I was thinking. And I was like, well, you know, people don't know this album quite as much. It's posthumous. And
all right, so Elliott Smith may be one of the more recognizable artists. We'll play that song now. Then we'll come back after that and we'll talk about the opposite, somebody that you've never heard of before. So here's some Elliott Smith, Angel in the Snow.
I'd say you make a perfect angel in the snow, all crushed out on where you are. Better stop before it goes too far. Don't you know that I love you? Sometimes I feel like still alive that fell down here to lay beside you.
All right, so Jason, tell me about Sad Brad, because this is a guy that, aside from probably his family and some friends, most of the people who watch this film will listen to a song and they'll go, man, that's a great song in the movie, but they'll have no idea who it is. Who's Sad Brad?
So Sad Brad is a friend of my brother-in-law, and that's about as much as I know about him, you know? After Juno, I started to get a lot of music. People would MySpace to me. If they would just kind of meet me, they would give me music, hoping that I could find a way to put it into a soundtrack. And it had never worked up until this moment. My brother-in-law emailed me one day saying, hey, you know, I listened to the Juno soundtrack. I really love the sound. I think you'd like the song. So I listened to it and I realized this guy is actually quite good. And I got a hold of him. I said, I emailed him. I said, I really like your voice. I'm making a new movie. Perhaps you'd like to write something for it. And I really didn't think anything was going to come of this. It was one of these moments where you just kind of throw something, you know, who knows what comes back. And what came back was a gorgeous song that I simply couldn't get out of my head.
And it's perfectly titled, right? Help Yourself. This is a movie where, not to give it away, but part of Clooney's speech every time his character talks to people is empowering
right.
the person he's laying off.
Yeah.
So in a sense, there is some literal value to this. The thing is, though, this is an artist that people are going to hear for the first time when they watch your film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you talk to an artist before the film comes out and say, listen, if this works, your life's going to be different?
I remember having these kind of conversations with Kimmy Dawson of the Moldy Peaches right before Juno, and I've done this with Brad as well. There's something exciting and I would imagine scary for them about it, that their sound is going to be linked with this film the same way Elliot was linked with Good Will Hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if it works, people will hear that song and pictures from the movie will come to their head. And I guess that speaks to the whole idea of a great soundtrack and what gets me excited about making a soundtrack. I used to collect tons of them. I still do. And a good one is when you put it on and from track one to the end, you re-experience the movie, whether you're in your car, or your home, or you're having dinner, or whatever, and you jump right back into the mood of the film.
I know you'll help us when you're feeling better, and we realize that it might not be for a long, long time, but we're willing to wait on you. We believe in everything that you can do if you could only lay down your mind. Take apart each brick that sits outside your heart and look around you. There's people everywhere. No, they don't always show it. They're just as scared, and we'd be more prepared if you just pulled on through. I want you to try to help yourself.
So what were the soundtracks that you remember? Like if you think now.
There was a moment when I was in college and the Reservoir Dogs soundtrack came out, and the Pulp Fiction soundtrack came out, and the Rushmore soundtrack came out. And those were defining moments just as I was trying to become a filmmaker. But if I go back further, I remember Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater had a killer soundtrack with Concrete Blonde and this cover of Leonard Cohen's Everybody Knows. I listen to that over and over.
And like really bizarre stuff, like you know, like "Hello, Dad, Happy Birthday, I'm in jail." Some really,
exactly.
It was a really diverse soundtrack, but it captured the mood of Happy Harry Hardon and his era,
exactly.
Right?
Directed by a Canadian.
Directed by a Canadian.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
And oh man, that's the first one that pops into my head.
You've actually got a guy here who spent some time in Canada, Roy Buchanan. You have a song on the soundtrack. This is a guy, and it's an interesting choice because he's a guy that nobody knew of in the mainstream media as well. Over time, other great artists found out who this guy was because he was considered one of the best unknown guitarists mm-hmm. of all time. And his career came later when songs were recorded. You have a song called Thank You, Lord. And tell me why you got Roy. How did you come? And so anyway, he moved to Canada, played with Ronnie Hawkins, mm-hmm. And then left. And then in his ashes, the band were formed with Robbie Robertson. So mm-hmm. So how did you come across a guy like Roy Buchanan?
Well, this actually brings up an important point, which is how a music supervisor comes into play in putting together sound of a film.
It's not you who sits in the whole thing. That's not how it works. What?
There are a lot of these songs that I dug for, and some are the great gifts of music supervisors. And there's one by the name of Randall Poster, who's a supervisor on this film, has worked with the greats Scorsese to Wes Anderson. And he introduced me to the song, and I immediately fell in love with it. You know, it has a steel guitar solo that was more beautiful than anyone I'd ever heard before. You know, the kind of song that you're listening to in the car, you get home, you park, and then you turn it on, you play it again, and play it as loud as you possibly can.
Sure.
And it almost makes you cry. And I just thought it was gorgeous, and it almost plays like score in this film because I only use the instrumental section in this film. But yeah, I just fell in love with it.
You mentioned the music supervisor. Some directors like to control every single aspect of the film.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't know an artist and you don't know a song and you don't have a relationship with the song mm-hmm. and it's presented to you, is that an easy choice or do you struggle with that?
You know, I don't even think about it. I honestly put the CD in or I download the song and I just listen and I just see how I respond to it. And I know very quickly usually whether it moves me or doesn't. I really don't care who the artist is. I mean, the thing that I prefer, and, you know, this is maybe perhaps a little lame, is that I prefer it to be unknown, you know? I'd rather not have a soundtrack where it's the Beatles followed by the Rolling Stone followed right. by Aerosmith.
That'd be very expensive to clear.
It'd be very expensive, and beyond that, I don't know if I could change your experience of Gimme Shelter.
Right.
Like, that's just going to be what it is. Yeah. You know, you probably have...
Scorsese's tried 50 times using that song in a soundtrack. Right?
But you already have 10 experiences with right. that song, and those are going to be it. But if I can give you a song you've never heard before, mm-hmm. or if you have, you don't really have a lot of experience with it, and your sole great experience can be this movie, then it's really exciting. Then I know every time you listen to these songs that it's going to take you back to the mood of this film, and that excites me.
So Taken at All is not the biggest song they've done, but when you have a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song,
mm-hmm.
that's a very well-known band.
Yes.
So when you get to the... Now, when you
I don't think people know who they are.
No,
I think...
really up and coming. You know?
I found these three guys.
I used to know a Canadian named Neil. He's not in the song.
Exactly.
So what you said, it makes sense because a lot of these artists, you know, have... varying degrees of independent success, or but they're not real mainstream. C.S. Crosby, Stills, and Nash are the only ones who really kind of had that breakthrough. Was that an easy choice for that song?
I consider myself decently versed in music, and I actually hadn't heard that song up until the last couple of years. So when I heard it, it was a new experience, and I thought, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people out there who are going to have a new experience when they hear this for the first time. And I'm a sucker for acoustic guitar.
This is me. Can you take another look? Did I see you looking blindly at your book? Is it all that you thought, that you thought it took? Can it be taken at all? Were you looking for signs along the way? See by your lonely light of day, is this road really the only way? Can this road be taken at all? Lost it on the highway, down the dotted line. By your lonely light of day, is this road really the only way? Can this road be taken at all? Can this road be taken at all?
There's a lot of good stuff in here. The Dan Auerbach song was amazing as well. You have Keep It Hid.
Yeah, see, I'm embarrassed. I had no idea. I didn't even know he was in my iTunes collection. I had gotten the folks at Rhino. Rhino released the Juno soundtrack. They're also releasing this one. They started to send me a lot of just great albums out of the catalog, and they sent me the Black Keys, and they sent me Dan Auerbach. And yeah, I just really liked it. And when it came down to the movie, often what happens is, you got to imagine, to picture the room, you got my editor sitting in an Avid, I'm sitting at a sofa on the other wall, and I have my laptop and a cable that goes from my laptop into the mixing board and goes right through the Avid into the speakers. So literally, she'll just play a scene over and over again, and I'll just click, you know, through tracks, trying it one after the next, see how this works. It's almost the most fun you can have during editing, because you've done the hard work, you've cut the scene together, and this is just waiting for you. It's like dessert, you know? Mm-hmm. You know the scene's going to get better once you add music. And because of that, you can't use music. It's a crutch to go in early with music. So you cut it dry, you go all dialogue, and then finally when you think you got it right, it's like, all right, now we can, you know, we can give this gift to ourselves and we can play some music, and we'll just sit there and put tracks. And that was a time when put up the Dan Auerbach song and suddenly it just clicks.
Let's take a listen to it. It's from a solo record called Keep It Hid. This is Going Home, and Dan Auerbach.
I've spent too long away from home. Did all the things I could have done. Gone on the days of endless dreams. I'm not the only one. So long.
You know, one of my favorite songs in the soundtrack is a track called Alabama Down by the Charlatans.
Yeah.
The Charlatans are not the Charlatans, the British band you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a band that, one of the early San Francisco Haight-Ashbury bands, they never weren't really that psychedelic, but they were a big part of the scene. And it works perfectly with another song that you have in this one, the ultimate psychedelic band from that era, which is Jefferson Airplane.
Right.
That's your literal airplane moment, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that song in an airplane scene? Or?
No, not really. I'm trying to think now. If it plays through some aerial footage, you know what? I may have to adjust the edit. Even though I locked picture this morning,
yeah.
I may have to go adjust that.
I'm Alabama bound. I'm Alabama bound. If that train don't stop and turn around, I'm Alabama bound.
So you're describing the room that you assemble the songs in, that you put the whole thing together, this, this editing suite. Do you have a time of the day? Like, can people, when they're flying over Hollywood, do they, at 3 o'clock in the morning, is that when you're with your earphones on or whatever?
I'm telling you, we work really traditional banker's hours. I know, I hear about directors working like 20 hours in the editing room, and somehow we cut very quickly. But we're there like 10 to 4 every day. Usually by 4 o'clock, I really want to go see a movie. And I'm like, I'm honestly, at 4 o'clock, I'm looking at the movie listings going, I wonder if I can make this 5:15 show. So we just work quickly and we make decisions quickly and I don't look back.
You ever gone, finished a film, locked it, or as close to lock as possible, gone out, lived your life, seen a movie, whatever, and then go, oh no, I've got to change this one thing. I've got to run back. Because bands do it all the time.
Right.
Does a director, can a director?
No, it's funny. I'm very confident in my decisions, and I would imagine that's a characteristic that helps you become a director. Mm-hmm. I have a certain feel for things, and I go off of my instincts, and I trust my instincts. You know, you screen a movie a couple times just to see how people react, because every once in a while you go, oh, wow, I'm completely wrong on this one. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I go off of my gut, and I trust my gut the same way I would listen to a song and tell you, this works for me or doesn't for this reason or not.
Mm-hmm. The thing about this film is sweet film. It's emotional. It's about relationships. It's about connections. It's about all that. But there is an underlying, very real a story that happens here, and this is people lose their jobs. Mm-hmm. Had this film come out 5 years ago, it would have been one thing. Today, a lot of people will be watching your film in the afternoons and a matinee because they lost their jobs. And you have testimonials throughout this film. When you're building the soundtrack, realizing that there are people who are watching this film that are very personally connected to at least part of the film. Is that something that comes into your head?
Oh, certainly. I mean, when I was writing this film, I realized there was certain scenes that just did not feel authentic enough to me. And when I thought about people having lost their jobs coming to see this film and how true this film needed to be for them, I realized that the scenes I had where people got fired weren't real enough. I originally tried to write them funny, but it just didn't work. I didn't believe them. And I thought the only way to make this work is if we somehow bring real people in, real mm-hmm. people who have been affected by this, and to act in these scenes. So we put Help Wanted ads out in the newspapers in St. Louis and in Detroit, two cities I think hit the hardest in the country. This is where we were shooting, saying, do you want to be part of a documentary? Interviewed on camera, just kind of exploring the ideas of being fired. And we got a huge stack of responses, and we finally ended up putting 60 people on film. 20 of them are in the finished film. And we'd put them on camera and just ask them, what was it like? How did it happen? And then we would fire them on camera, and they would respond either the way they did the day they were fired or how maybe they wish they had reacted.
Those were all real people who lost their jobs?
Yeah.
What's the mood like on the set that day, those days?
Oh, it's tense. I mean, it's tense, although, I mean, people break it with a little bit of comedy, but no, it's tense. It was emotional. You don't get to talk about these things. A lot of these people were talking about it for the first time. And they got very emotional. A lot of people cried. A lot of people got angry. What was amazing to me is, and I work with actors on a daily basis, is the ease with which they were able to suddenly be real on camera. It's hard to be real on camera. You're on camera, mm-hmm. you know, every day. It's hard to just be yourself. And they forgot about the camera almost instantaneously and were able to kind of converse and do this scene where they were being fired and react honestly. So much so that they started to ask our interviewer questions about their severance, things, you know, that we have no idea. And they said the kind of things that I could never write, mm-hmm. things that are in the movie that people come after and talk to me about. And there's actually a song that has wound up in the film by the same course.
So if you're watching this film, don't leave when the credits start, because there's going to be a song in the credits, right?
Right.
That is directly connected to this. Tell the story.
Yeah. You know, a guy in St. Louis came up to me and said, I wrote a song for your movie. I was wondering if you'd consider it. And, you know, to be honest, I didn't expect much. This is something that kind of happens often. People write songs and they send them in. But he handed me a cassette tape. That was unusual. I had to first figure out, where am I going to play this? You know, I think I've just recently finally threw out my cassette decks. And it was a PA on set who had a cassette deck in his car. And we went and all piled into his car and to listen to it. Not sure what to expect. And the guy introduced himself and explained that he had lost his job. He was in his mid-50s and didn't exactly know where he was supposed to go in life at this point. What was the purpose of his life at this point? And he had written a song about it. And it was just him and a guitar with a little cassette deck. I mean, you could hear it as he, like, mm-hmm. pressed record and the hissing sound from that bad mic. But it was beautiful. It's not the greatest song ever written, but it really spoke to me, and it was honest. And I would think that you probably look for the same thing in music that I look for in a performance out of an actor or out of story. You just want honesty. When someone sings to you, you want to believe them. You want to feel that this is real. And there was so much honesty in what he was saying and how he was saying it that I knew it had to be a part of the film. And almost immediately decided this is going to go in the closing credits.
Is it a re-record or that version, or how are you going to use it?
No, it's it. I got the cassette tape sitting on my desk in my office. We're going to put it in. In fact, it's funny. We're 2 weeks away from mixing. I haven't told the guy yet. I was holding off, and we have to get a hold of him.
So your song is going to be in this film.
Yeah.
Hi, Jason. My name is Kevin Rennick, and I've written a song called Up in the Air. I wanted you to hear it. And it goes like this. I'm up in the air. Choices drifting by me everywhere. And I can't find the one would help me do the work I've left undone. 'Cause I'm up in the air. I'm making some plans, finding out there's always new demands. And I can't be precise when people ask me what I'm doing with my life. I say it's up in the air. I'm hearing from friends. It's that tired old advice again. You just cannot keep floating all around. Oh, you got to get your feet back on the ground. But it's hard to come down when you're up in the air. 'cause my heart's so good. I breathe the air and I know that I'm alive. And I stare at all the birds as they fly by. I guess it all comes down to them, 'cause they're up in the air.
That's amazing. You know, in CSI Miami, David Caruso's sunglasses are a character, and they write those sunglasses like they are a character. Is a soundtrack a character in a film?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it can be. You know, certain times it's not. You know, look, you go watch the movie Armageddon. There's a lot of songs in it, but I wouldn't exactly call the soundtrack of Armageddon a character in that movie. But often, when it works best, the soundtrack is a character. Sometimes a more important character than almost any of the actors in the film.
You mentioned Zach Braff, right? Like that Garden State New Slang song from The Shins. That is one of the defining moments, and that song is the star of that scene.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that soundtrack is one of the, I'll call it, three or four leads of that movie. That you take that soundtrack out, and it's like taking Natalie Portman out of that film. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few films like that, and I get excited about that idea. Certainly, this is George's movie, but I think the soundtrack is one of his supporting cast.
And, you know, one of the great scenes in the film is when Vera's character, George's character, and Anna's character, the three of them go to this dance. Mm-hmm. I mean, Young MC plays, which is crazy. Great DJ Cut Chemist is
that was, by the way, crowning moment. You know, it's easy as a screenwriter to sit there and write, and Young MC performs on stage. And you just hope, you dream that he will show up. And I remember actually talking to him on the phone for the first time, and I was like, do I call you Young? He's like, my name's Marvin. I was like, oh, hey, Marvin.
But you've got the scene with you got Young MC and you've got Cut Chemist, and right. And then as the party progresses, it becomes reminiscent. So it's one of those, you know, it's like the end of the high school dance. Mm-hmm. You know, your tie is looser and that thing. That must be fun to kind of find the songs for that moment.
Oh yeah. Well, that was one of those, again, instantaneous. I'm writing the scene and I think, God, wouldn't it be amazing to have Young MC actually perform in this movie? You know, he's one of the, you know, the great musicians of my youth. And, you know, as you've said before, you know, at the dawn of the popular hip hop. And yeah, it was just, you know, you don't believe it until he actually shows up in set and you shake his hand and you go, I can't believe I just wrote the words and you showed up.
So going back to what we talked about right off the top, now you have to write a movie that can use a country and western soundtrack. You have all these songs.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think I should actually just release a compilation of country western. I think I need my kind of Reitman country western hits, and I'll wear a cowboy hat on the cover or something.
Just remake Blazing Saddles. Tell me about the Charles Atlas track that you have there, Charles.
So, you know, I think this that song really speaks to having your receptors out in the air, because people do ask me often, you know, where I find music. And while I was shooting in St. Louis, there was an indie radio station, and there's less and less great radio out there as all the radio stations get bought up, and I just started to listen to that as my kind of sole music source in St. Louis. And one night I was listening to the show, and there was this girl who had a great show, and I actually ended up kind of emailing her and started to correspond with her, and I started going through all her backtracks, and I found this song, The Snow Before Us, and I needed something that would speak hopefully at the end of this movie, and it was perfect.
Well, thank you, Jason, for coming by and talking so much about the songs, the soundtrack, and the score of your film. It's called Up in the Air. So he's Jason Reitman. My name is George Strombolopoulos. Thank you very much for listening.